Best quotes. Obviously, nobody puts baby in the corner.
She wasn't in a corner. She was just sat by the wall. It was originally going to be on a square table. They changed it to a round one. She's no longer in the corner.
Excellent.
Top 5 Face Off contains adult themes and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
He's Matt Hurst.
He's Matt Squirrel.
And this is Top 5 Face Off, the official world rankings of everything. What are we ranking today, Hurst?
Matt Squirrel, today we're going to be ranking the top 5 chick flicks.
Coming right up after this.
If there's more than one, then there's a best and a worst. If there's more than 5, call Squirrel and Hurst. It's the Top 5 Face Off. Actual fact. It's the Top 5.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, rankers. Welcome back. And for any new rankers, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Squirrel, for all our new rankers, why don't you tell them what we do here and why we do it?
We rank shit. Our Patreons choose stuff and we pick randomly and we rank shit. And then people vote on our website, www.top5faceoff.co.uk. And that becomes the official world ranking of whatever the shit we're ranking is.
Yeah, sounds about right. But being British, we don't like to get straight to the point. We like to beat around the proverbial bush. So, how's the weather been, Squirrel?
Sunny, mate, as evidenced by your glowing face.
Yes, I do look radioactive, rankers.
You do.
I'm not actually as red as I look, but it's a little bit disconcerting. If in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, Violet Beauregard had chewed on a red currant instead of a blueberry-flavoured chewing gum, she would have probably started looking a lot like I do right now. It's actually a little bit distracting, but we're going to try and power through. But yes, I have been out in the sun, but I'm not as burnt as I look, and it's been flipping glorious. Yesterday was absolutely boils.
Yeah, it's all right.
My friend Polly was up for the weekend, and we went out to a pub in Retford that was right on the canal and sat there drinking craft beers and chatting to people, and it was like, yeah, man, feels like full-on summer, and we're still only in April, so... good times were had.
Yes, it's true. Although there is May is soon. We're quite near the end of April if you're coming to this a bit later on, rankers. And if you are, remember, you can't vote on this one because this one's already finished, but you could jump to the very latest episode and you'll be able to vote on that one. So don't forget.
Good point.
Yeah, maybe they just searched up something about chick flicks because that's what we're doing today and it gave them this. That would be nice if that happened. Yeah. Although, sorry if we're about to just... utterly steamroll what the fuck a chick flick is, because honestly...
it's a bit like the big man action movie thing.
I think it's a bit worse than that.
You kind of feel you know what it is.
You know what it is, but it can be almost anything, really. Not almost... you know what I mean, though.
For me, I felt as I went through them, there were certain things that... like the lead character pretty much has to be, at least if it's co-leads, one of them has to be female. And I felt like if it was a pure male lead, it stopped being a chick flick. It was just another flick. But I mean, I didn't write any of these specifics down, but that was just kind of the feel I had about it as I went through it.
Yes. And things like, much as I would love to include aliens, that absolutely isn't one. But it almost could be, but there's something saying it's not because it's about shooting things and that's not chick flicky. It doesn't seem to matter so much what it's about. It's more of a vibe.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right. It's this is, well, anyway, the rankers can let us know with their joy or their ire.
This is true.
Whether we are doing the right thing or not. And we'll find out all about that in the notes. We've got a couple of other bits of preamble to go through as well.
We do. I prematurely spoke.
Yes. So what's been going on?
What's been going on, Hurst? Nothing much since we talked about 80s/90s cartoons, I don't think. Has anything super exciting happened in the world of Squirrel? I had a rough old week. Here we go. Here's a week for you. So I normally work from home. Excellent. Thumbs up. Up thumbs.
Up thumbs.
But I didn't this week. We were doing some kind of whole company or large part of the company stuff in London on Monday and Tuesday. I was in London. I had Wednesday off because I went to see The Prodigy, this little band you might remember from when you were younger. It was all right. And 13,000 other people turned up to watch them too. That was fun. But that was in Leeds and I live in Bedford. And if you're outside of the UK, or you just don't know how far Bedford is from anywhere, because where the fuck is Bedford? I agree. I drove about 500 miles that day because I drove there and drove back again. Where the fuck did I drive back again? Well, because I was back in London on Thursday morning for another work thing. So I got back from Leeds around about 3, and I was in a taxi by 7 to go back to London the next day.
Fuck that shit. No. Absolutely not. I couldn't cope with that at all. I mean, as a man who typically goes to bed, now that I'm having to get up at 6:30 again to go to work, I typically go to bed around 9:00.
Good Lord, how do you get anything? No wonder we're behind on the fucking Patreon special. Yeah. How do you get anything done?
I just find I'm really tired, because it's not just that, you know, I'm up at 6:30. It's exhausting being a TA. I mean, I assume it's the same in regular mainstream schools, but in a special needs school, I spend so much time just chasing kids around who've decided they're not going to be in lessons and they're just going for a walk around the grounds, and I have to run off after them, and then at playtime, they all want to play tag, which is called TIG up here. They run up, hit me and say TIG, and then I have to chase them. Only they haven't really cottoned onto the rules of TIG, because one of them will run up and go TIG and slap me and then run off. And just as I'm about to start chasing, another one run up and slap me and go TIG and run off as well. And then a third might do the same thing. It's like, I don't know if you guys
grasp the concept.
Yeah, they know to TIG and run away, but then if I haven't reacted quickly enough to chasing them, they'll all come and tick me some more.
Someone else just takes up the mantle.
Because it's exhausting. I've had to set the rules. At lunch break, I don't play tick. Right. That's just the rules. So it's exhausting between chasing them around when they're supposed to be in class and chasing around when they're not supposed to be in class. I get home and I'm absolutely pooped. So by 9:00, it's like I can barely keep my eyes open. I need a good night's sleep to go back in and crack on with it.
We call it TIG as well.
Did
down
you?
Here in Bedford, yeah.
It was It. We played It. And you were
Yeah,
it.
We would also call it that. It was interchangeable. You were It in the game of TIG.
Yeah, we never said tag. It was always It. But up here, it's very TIG focused. I don't know if that's just in our school or not. But anyway,
there you are.
I feel like this is probably not fascinating stuff. Well, I'll tell you something. I've made a note on what's been going on my end. You know, when you've got your notes and your apps, I was having a little scroll through that to see what was on there, see if there's anything I could just delete. And I came across one that it took me a while. I couldn't figure out why I'd written it. And this is what the note said. Don't you just want to get your tweezers out and sort out that wedgie? This was a note I'd written. I was like, why have I written that note to myself? What's happening?
What was going on? If only you had a podcast at the time, Ernst, you may well have talked about it.
Yeah. But what it was, I remembered.
Ah.
We were in a cafe or something, Carly and me, and this woman, you know how the trend for women's leggings is now that they have them so it looks like their ass is eating some of the leggings? Like,
Yes. Yes, it's incredibly tight.
Stitch it round so it basically looks like, you know, they're almost naked. You can see the full-on butt cheeks in the crack.
Yes.
And I was just marvelling at how this woman had gone out and basically her ass was devouring her leggings. And I wanted to tell Carly and laugh about it, but obviously the woman was standing right there, so I had to write it in my notes.
And then show it to Carly.
Yes, and show it to Carly so she could snigger as well, like the terrible people we are. But yeah, it was funny just looking through my list and going, what the hell was I thinking when I wrote that note to myself? It turned out it was a note to Carly. So, you know, that made me laugh. I thought rankers will love that. Gripping your shit, anything? Anything verbing your noun these days?
Pretty chill. Has anything annoyed me? Is it interesting? No, nothing has annoyed me.
Okay, good stuff. So, should we talk about what happened last week?
Let's hit up some 80s and 90s cartoon results, shall we? Well, let's start with, as we always start with, whoever gets in there first, and this time it is Meg 98.
Oh, Meg 98. That makes a nice change.
Yeah, well, makes a change. I thought for sure Squirrel was going to drop He-Man at number one, but D plus 3M sealed it for me. Also, the Starscream voice had me getting some very strange looks on the silent train as I ugly laughed in front of a bunch of people. Excellent, says Meg 98. Thank you, Meg.
Brilliant.
She is not the only one to mention Starscream, but we'll come back to that. Here is a vote for me, which is anonymous. It just says, all hail Megatron.
Yeah.
Hold for Davpaz. Damn your eyes for making me choose between Transformers and Turtles. In the end, I had to waver to Hearst, as Cities of Gold is better than Dogtanyan. Yeah. It's true. It might not be fucking true, Davpaz. We'll let you know in a minute or two.
Yeah.
And Skrill cheated with Johnny Bravo, tut tut. Yeah, maybe. But you're the only person to mention it, so I don't care. Alrighty. It's Ohio, says presumably Ohio. Thundercats takes it for me, brings back memories of all my friends laughing because Tigra was my favourite. Come on, Tigra wasn't anyone's favourite, man. Also, Peter Cullins was the voice of Optimus Prime and Venger. Yes, I think I mentioned that, but very quickly while you were laughing at something. Keep on ranking, says Ohio. P.S. Love the Starscream voice and her key story. Yes, the key story had me pissing myself.
Ah, yes.
Here is a vote for you, Hurst. This was a great list. Plus, I can't not vote for Batman. Cheers, Cov.
Thanks, Cov. Yeah, that's true. Cov can't not vote for Batman. I think it's actually physically impossible for him.
Yeah.
Does love some Batman.
Someone else loves some Batman. BTAS is so fucking good. Kevin Conroy, that baller opening sequence with the Elfman-inspired music. Putting that at number one guaranteed the vote. Best chick flick is Chicken Run, obviously, says Gaz Chat. Hey. A vote for me simply says Muskerhounds for the win. That's from Kern. Thank you, Kern.
Ah, I mean, that's done nicely for people, man. I wasn't sure it was probably going to go one of two ways. People would go like, whatevs, or like, nostalgia, boom, boom.
Boom, boom. It's all pretty nostalgia, right? Well, let's see what this ranker thinks. Woof, very, very, very close call on these. In the end, I had to go with Squirrel, who had the cartoons with the better theme songs. But for shame on both of you for your Transformers knowledge. In the first episode, they all did change into weird alien ships and cannons on Cybertron, but they crashed on Earth thousands of years ago. Then when they were awoken, their computer made them transform into Earthlings for disguise reasons. You could easily done a top 10 here. The 80s were peak for cartoons. That's from Moneyslinger. Thank you, Moneyslinger. Not the only person to point out the Transformers facts that actually I fucked up, but then you didn't correct me.
Well, you know what? That's why we have the Malcolms. We embrace Malcolm culture here.
We do. We want to know what we get wrong, Malks. Let us know. Not in our general life choices. Dear Lord, back off. But on this podcast, we would like to hear from you. Tough choice this week. As everyone knows, the top five is actually Dogtanyan, Mysterious Cities of Gold, Mask, Dungeons & Dragons, and Thundercats. So I had to go with the person with the most correct entries. That's from Trooper, and that person is me. I think I had three of them, and you had two of them. You had, so Dogtanyan, me, Mysterious Cities of Gold, you. Yeah. Mask, did you say Mask?
Me. Wasn't it?
Yes, no, Dungeons & Dragons and Thundercats were both me, though.
I mean, you said Dungeons and Dragons as well.
Maybe it's because I had it higher up.
Who knows?
Who knows? We checked your maths, Trooper, and found it wanting. Now, I'll be honest, this one was almost a tough call.
Interesting.
The Free Muskerhounds nearly had me voting for Skrull this week. Oh. Because that theme tune takes me straight back to being 6 years old, sitting round at Haley Fox's house, watching on the telly, absolutely convinced that one day I was going to marry her. She had no idea, of course, but look, what Haley didn't know, and what Skrull needs to understand now, for fuck's sake, is that this is the season of Hearst, and it's an unstoppable force. It cannot be slowed down. It certainly cannot be derailed by something as trivial as a six-year-old's crush on a classmate. So, sentimental journey aside, it's a vote for Hearst for me from The Vision. Fuck's sake.
Shout out to Haley Fox. Get in touch. Let Vision know that you liked him too.
Haley Fox is a pretty
it's a great cool name.
Sounding name, right?
God damn. Right, yeah.
And now Haley Fox. Woo!
Yeah, definitely.
Possibly, you know, hopefully older than six now.
Well, you don't hope so, yeah. Good one, Vision.
Good one, Vision. Well, now I'm just laughing randomly. Because we just chopped a load of stuff out. Anyway, let's carry on. Very close this week, but Squirrel nudged it. I'm very much looking forward to the live-action He-Man film in the summer from Katie. Thank you, Katie. Pretty sure that used to say love, Katie. I don't know what we did to upset her.
Oh, it must have said something.
Vote for Hearst, but love, and then... Listen, I don't know who you are, Anonymous, but you've typed out the entire Free Muskerhounds theme tune here. Thank you very much for writing all of that into a tiny comment box and voting for Hearst. All right, that's a lot of comments. That'll do for this week. Hearst.
Feels like you had a few more than me, which I think.
But as we know, that
it usually does, though, doesn't it? It usually does. And you do need this one, because I think we're on a 3-peat or something at the minute, so you need something.
Again, you're the stats guy.
I can't remember. It's harder to keep up with it when it's every other week. When it was every week, it was easier to keep tabs.
It certainly wasn't easier to do the edit in, though. Well, no, I'll put you out of your misery, Hurst. I got 31, and you got 25.
Oh, decent.
So, yeah, no, big numbers. But who wants to hear the official top 5 80s and 90s cartoons?
I know what I do.
At number 5 is Johnny Bravo. At number 4, the mighty Thundercats. At number 3, Dungeons and Dragons. At number 2, Teenage Mutant Hero / Ninja Turtles. And at number 1, Dogtanyan and the Three Muskahounds, the greatest 80s / 90s cartoon of all time.
Very good. Well done. A worthy sure list. Has. I can't say that. It upsets me.
So many good cartoons to choose from. Could really easily be in the top 10. But that is the past, Hurst. Shall we look toward the future? Do you want to rank some chick flicks?
Absolutely, I do.
Hurst, you've been regularly going first, haven't you?
Over does the seem past to happen a lot.
Few episodes.
Except for that time when you had Blue Tack on the coin for a couple of weeks and it chose you.
A couple of weeks and it kept coming up tails. Heads for Hurst. Squirrels have tails. Non-Patreons may not realise that Hurst pointed out that squirrels also have heads on one of our Patreon episodes. I hadn't really thought about that before, but he's absolutely right. Anyway, let's flip it. Oh, squirrels have tails! And I will leap straight in, Hurst, with my number 5, a comedy movie from 2010, directed by Will Gluck, called Easy A. Easy A is an excellent film. It stars Emma Stone as Olive Pendergast. I'm pretty sure that's how she said her name in the film. I didn't rewatch it for this because I just remember it being great. It's loosely inspired by The Scarlet Letter, but basically what happens is Olive becomes the subject of school gossip because she lies about losing her virginity, and it's all about reputation in schools and slut-shaming and stuff like that. And Emma Stone is absolutely fucking great in it. It's only a little film. It had an $8 million budget. It made $75 million worldwide. Good job. Stone actually got a Golden Globe nomination for Best Actress in a Comedy or musical. So yeah, well done. Easy A, absolutely worth a watch. Also has some of the best parents of teenage people out of any film I've ever seen. They are fantastic. They are secret weapons. Patricia Clarkson and Stanley Tucci were the parents and basically made it feel like a separate sitcom to the rest of the movie. It was so good. But anyway, number 5, Easy A.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I did see that once. I haven't seen it since, and I haven't watched this week, so cheeky spoiler there. My number 5 was 1990's Ghost, weighing in at 2 hours and 6 minutes and starring Demi Moore, Patrick Swayze, and Whoopi Goldberg. I've written some summaries for each of these, so
all right,
let me hit you with some knowledge. A young couple, Sam and Molly, move into an unrealistically nice apartment, whereupon Sam gets shot for being noble and dies. Sam doesn't take it well and becomes a detective ghost instead of going to heaven. After doing detective work for a bit, he gets annoyed that nobody can see or hear his cleverness, so he goes to a big old phony ghost whisperer called Oda Mae Brown, who turns out not to be a phony, which surprises her more than anyone. Sam and Oda Mae tell Molly about the scam involving Sam's best friend Carl and his hired thug Willie Lopez that ended up killing Sam. After a bit of convincing, Molly joins the Scooby gang as the tearful one and they solve the crime. Kill the baddies, who all go to hell in an absolutely terrifying style, and then Sam can finally go to heaven and put his feet up. That's the summary of Ghost.
That is Ghost.
It's a classic film. It's got the bits with the clay modelling. It's got...
Yeah, been parodied so many times.
Has been parodied a lot, but it is a great film. I've done some best quotes for each one as well, so...
Oh, okay.
Best quotes for this one. I love you. Ditto.
Yes.
Because he would never say it. And that's how Oda Mae eventually convinced her that maybe Sam was with her. No, it was cool. I enjoyed Ghost. I've rewatched it several times and it's still good. And, yeah, a bit weepy.
There you go. And Whoopi Goldberg was funny.
Really funny.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of these ones I've found that it's not the main characters that really hold it all together. They do a great job, but there's usually someone, some character in there who's just brilliant. And yeah, Whoopi Goldberg did steal the show a little bit with her Oda Mae Brown.
That also happened to some extent with my number four, Hurst. My number four is Some Kind of Wonderful. It's a John Hughes movie, written and produced by John Hughes anyway, but this was back when he wasn't directing them all, so Howard Deutsch directed this one in 1987. It stars Eric Stoltz. He is probably best known nowadays as the drug dealer from Pulp Fiction, who has the needle that goes into Uma Thurman's heart. Mary Stuart Masterson, not really sure what's happened to her. Lee Thompson, Marty McFly's mum. Very, very easy to look at. And a guy called Craig Sheffer. He's the bad guy. And it's very much in John Hughes' teen romance universe. But it's a bit moodier and darker. It's not like dark, dark, but it's a lot darker than, say, Pretty in Pink, for instance. And it's not as, you know, sweet rapper covered as some of his better known stuff. But John Hughes basically did another love triangle thing, but did it much better than he did in Pretty Pink. And Some Kind of Wonderful is more about not who's going to get the girl, but whether anyone deserves to get the girl and whether the girl is worth getting just because she is absolutely stunning. Which she absolutely is. And I remember watching it. I remember I was in bed in my bedroom and I had a TV kind of on the wall at the end of my bed, like, a, you know, the little 14-inch
I remember them.
Cubes that were TVs. And it was just kind of on and I missed the first 2 minutes, so I never knew what it was called. So I assumed it was called Amanda Jones for ages because that was the name of the girl in the film after the song by the Rolling Stones. But then I eventually found it. But yeah, it's a great film. It just made me really happy. It's really well done, like all of John Hughes' things are when it comes to teenagers. And it's a lot smarter than your average teen romance. And there's a guy in it called Duncan. He's a skinhead. He is excellent. He is just hilarious and brilliant throughout. So, yeah. You've not heard of Some Kind of Wonderful? I imagine lots of our rankers haven't heard of Some Kind of Wonderful. Go and watch it. It's worth a go.
Oh, thanks for the tip. Good stuff. Mm. Interestingly, my number four doesn't have that kind of comedy character pulling the whole thing through. And again, my number four is not a comedy, much like Ghost. It's classic, though, and it's called Dirty Dancing.
I was going to say it's Swayze's sneaking in again, is he?
Yeah, 1987, weighing in at 1 hour and 40 minutes, so right in that sweet zone, starring Patrick Swayze. Again, not all of mine have Patrick Swayze in, but he was excellent chick flick bait, especially around the late 80s, early 90s.
It's true.
Summary. Dirty Dancing is essentially what happens when a sheltered girl goes on holiday and accidentally signs up for a crash course in feminism, rebellion, and thrusting. Baby arrives at a posh resort expecting polite dinners and maybe a bit of bingo, and instead she discovers a secret underground world where the staff are hotter, the music is better, and everyone communicates exclusively through intense eye contact and dance moves. Enter Johnny, brooding, talented, and powered entirely by hair gel and emotional trauma. There's a rich girl meets working class boy romance, surprisingly serious subplot involving very dodgy doctor, and a lot of people dramatically storming out of rooms. Baby, armed with determination and questionable rhythm, decides she will learn to dance, save the day, and fall in love, preferably all before the end of season talent show. It all builds to one of cinema's most iconic finales where everyone suddenly becomes a professional dancer, Johnny defies gravity, and Baby proves that, yes, you can do impossible dance moves if you believe in yourself and have had approximately 3 rehearsals.
Yes, in the water.
The moral of the story is, rich people are dicks to poor people, but poor people are cooler than rich people. So, that's Dirty Dancing. Excellent stuff. Mm. Best quotes. Obviously, nobody puts Baby in the corner.
Bullshit. She wasn't in a fucking corner. She was just sat by the wall. That's one of the most annoying things of the entire film. It was originally going to be on a square table. They changed it to a round one. She's no longer in the corner. It's bullshit.
Excellent. But the other one I've put in, which made me chuckle quite a lot, is when she first goes into the sexy underground dance world because she's seen something's going on and she's managed to wangle going in there by carrying in a watermelon. And when she sees Johnny and he gives her that kind of shade, rich kid, why are you in here? She says, I carried a watermelon, and then just hates herself for it. It's a great line. Like, yeah, you know what? That's pretty epic as well. So that's got into my best quotes.
There you go.
Number four, Dirty Dancing, 1987.
Now, I always thought that her dad was legitimately sensible throughout. Like, he didn't know that it wasn't Johnny who had knocked up Penny. And that bit, by the way, I remember watching this and I wasn't very old. They never used the word abortion or pregnant. I had no idea what was wrong with Penny. I had no idea what she had done to her or why she was sick now. She seemed fine. And then she went away for some medical thing and came back iller. What? I didn't get that at all. But yeah. Her dad dealt with it really well. He helped Penny out without like asking for anything in return. And then when he found out that he was wrong about Johnny, he apologized and shook hands with the guy. Her dad was cool.
Ah, but he doesn't. He says, I'm the kind of person that knows when he's wrong.
Mm.
He never says sorry.
Ah, maybe. I mean, I suppose he did statutory rape his daughter, so I think he has something to go on there.
Yeah, I mean, there's well, that,
like 10 years older as well. That's all pretty easy.
We don't worry about the minutiae of these films. But, but yeah, it's a classic film. It's brilliant.
All right. Number three for me in my top five chick flicks is a sports movie. It's a sports movie called A League of Their Own, and it is brilliant. Chick flick or not chick flick? A League of Their Own came out in 1992, which was, what was that, 34 years ago now? It was directed by Penny Marshall, who's gone on to have some good success. And it starred Gina Davis, who vanished, Tom Hanks, who's Forrest, Madonna, Laurie Petty, Rosie O'Donnell, never mind, not everything could be perfect. And it fictionalizes the real story of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, which existed during and slightly after the Second World War, because all the boys were off fighting, so the girls had to do the sports to entertain people. Ugh, girls. And the whole story is about that for large chunks. It's, ugh, girls can't play baseball. It turns out they fucking well can, and they play it really well. It's several things at once. It is a sports movie. It's an ensemble comedy. It's history of a time when women, weren't as respected as men, but hey, when hasn't that been the fucking case? But anyway, like sisterly drama, wartime nostalgia, and Tom Hanks basically shouting at women until his face nearly falls off. Obviously, the famous line from it, there's no crying in baseball, but the whole thing is secretly about how there absolutely is crying in baseball, and that's fine. It's not just sports, it's feelings. And Penny Marshall, the director, became associated with some huge mainstream hits at a time when female directors weren't really being handed many of those opportunities, and A League of Their Own grossed $132 million worldwide. Excellent work, League of Their Own. It's sentimental, but it's not like soppy or soft or whatever you want to call it, and the women in it are legitimately competitive and funny and good at what they want to do and crap to each other sometimes, and they're knackered and they're brave, and they, you know, there's the big bit at the end. It's like, who's gonna win the finale after one of them gets kicked out of the team and joins the other team that's in the finale? Oh no. And yes, exactly what you want. League of Their Own is fucking brilliant, just like the ladies who played baseball back in those days.
I think in sports they call it a final.
Well, yeah. Game seven!
That's the actually World Series, the Super that's Bowl! It, of course.
The World Series of baseball. And Japan once said, can we come and join in? America went no. So, yeah, that was nice. There you are.
Well, because they'd done that before with Canada and hockey and then lost. And they decided no one else could compete in the World Series of things. I think that's true. Ohio might have to mark us up with that one.
That's true. Ohio can perhaps let us know if he watches baseball.
He or she.
Yeah, that's true. We never established that.
Or they.
Yeah, there's so many options.
Indeed. So, yes, it's a good one. And interestingly, Madonna, not famously good at acting, did a really nice job in A League of Their Own.
Oscar nominated actress well. Madonna. Yes. What? She was an all right actor.
I never really rated her.
Aww. Yeah, no, she did a good job in that as May. And yeah, Rosie O'Donnell is Rosie O'Donnelling all over the place. But apparently was the one on of the actresses that was actually very good at baseball. So there you are. Anything you see them doing is normally a stunt double, except for Rosie O'Donnell, who did all her own shit. So there you are.
Oh, fun fact. I like it. Shame it wasn't your first. I might not have guessed that.
Oh, there you are.
Okie dokie. Well, my number three is coming into much funnier times. 1997's My Best Friend's Wedding. Weighing in at 1 hour and 45 minutes. It is just brilliant. I really struggled not putting it higher up, but there you go. Starring Julia Roberts, Cameron Diaz, Dermot Mulroney, and Rupert Everett, who we will come back to in a minute, because brilliant. The story is Julianne Potter, a successful but commitment-shy woman who realises she's in love with her best friend Michael when he announces he's about to marry someone else. Years earlier, they'd made a pact to marry each other if they were still single at 28. Michael leaves a message on her answering machine saying he's marrying a sweet girl called Kimmy. Julianne panics at the thought of losing him for good, convinced he's making a mistake and that she's the one he truly belongs with, she sets out to stop the wedding using a mix of charm, manipulation, and desperation. It's just a great film. It gets to business really quickly. There's no unnecessary preamble just to make the film longer. It introduces Rupert Everett as Julianne's gay best friend, George, and honestly, one of my favourite comedy performances of all time. He's suave but camp, supportive but brutally honest. He's not a main character, but deserved a supporting actor Oscar because it was the perfect performance. They all deliver great performances. Cameron Diaz as Kimmy is just adorable. Like when she was in Something About Mary and he's like, well, it's obvious why they all love her, not just because she's beautiful, but she's this lovely, carefree character, this free spirit. And once again, she's got that with Kimmy, but it's not like a shitty little, oh, she's just the pretty girl that he wants to marry. She's got gumption and she is fierce when she needs to be. She's joyful. Just they're all brilliant. Dermot Mulroney plays the main guy, Michael, and he plays the straight man across it brilliantly when there's so many great comedy performances around it. He's just the steady pulse of it. But when you've got the likes of Rupert Everett around you and Julia Roberts getting increasingly bonkers as the film goes on, I love it. It's got slapstick, nuance, cringe, outrage, uncertainty, but ultimately a perfect resolution. It's just a masterclass in romantic comedy. Even the ridiculous scenes, I think, are on the right side of believable, e.g. the karaoke bar, George meeting the family, the lads doing the harmonising at the wedding on Helium, which is just great. It's just little touches like that throughout. The sister licking the ice sculpture of the David. It's like, I don't see what the problem is. It's a sculpture of the David. And it's like, as a grown-up, you're like, yeah, I get it, but it'll go over loads of heads. It's a great story. Well delivered, perfectly accessorized. My best quotes from it. Once Julianne has revealed to Michael what she's done, she says, I'm pond scum. Lower, actually. I'm the fungus that feeds on the pond scum. And he replies, lower. The pus that infects the mucus that crunches up the fungus that feeds on the pond scum. Just spectacular. And when Julianne's trying to explain to Kimmy that maybe she's just too fancy for Michael, maybe as a food critic, maybe he just wants Jell-O. And she goes, I could be Jell-O. She says, you're never going to be Jell-O. It's brilliant line. And it's true, the whole Say a Little Prayer for Me karaoke scene, just so, so good. I love that film so much. My Best Friend's Wedding, number 3.
All right. Which one would be your choice from the two ladies in the film?
Kimmy, on account of she's not a sociopathic psycho.
Yeah, fair.
She's also Cameron Diaz in Pete Cameron Diaz.
She is Pete Cameron Diaz. What? I don't know. Is she Pete Cameron? I don't argue Pete Cameron Diaz was in The Mask.
Yeah, also. But similar time. Not,
that was
not,
first Cameron Diaz.
That
as
was
well,
first Cameron Diaz. Yeah, that was also Pete Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, no, it's a solid movie. I won't say anything more in case what I want to say comes up in our future. So let's carry on. So we're up to number 2 already. Look at us go. Number 2 for me is The Pitch Perfect. It's from 2012. It's a movie about girls that sing a cappella music, and it stars Anna Kendrick, Rebel Wilson, Brittany Snow, Anna Camp, and Skylar Astin. And goodness me, are nearly all of them incredibly attractive ladies to be singing some music at you. And they're all pretty good at singing too. And it wasn't meant to be any good, which sounds a bit of a daft thing to say, but it wasn't. They didn't really advertise it too hard. They didn't think it was going to be much of a success. It only had a budget of $17 million in 2012, man. So basically low budget somehow, you would call that. $115 million it bought in America alone. So nice. Good job, Pitch Perfect and the ladies. It's also a sports movie, and I will die on this hill. It is a sports movie in the same way that League of Their Own is a sports movie. It's just disguised as a singing comedy. They've got training montages, there's a rival team, there's internal politics, there's a big finale or final competition, there's a disgraced former champion, there's redemption arcs, and the only difference is rather than getting into fistfights, they do harmonies, right? So it's just a sports movie. I will die on that hill.
I would say you're making some good points, but there isn't any sport in it.
Well, there's competitions. It depends on how you judge sports.
Competition,
right?
Is not the same as sport. Like a Scrabble competition isn't sport.
Yes, true, but does that stop it from being a sports movie? It still has all the things apart from football.
Well, for instance, you could probably sum up every single movie with about three plots.
Maybe. I think it's 12, isn't it?
Is it 12? Yes. I don't know. I'm just guessing that. So. Okay. Well, anyway, we'll carry on because I like Pitch Perfect. Tell me more about
it. Yes. Well, of course you do, because it's really, really fucking funny. You've got the really quiet Asian girl and you've got Fat Amy, which is Rebel Wilson, who does a lot of the heavy lifting and says, I didn't expect to like you skinny bitches, but I think you've all got fat hearts.
Nice.
It knows it's ridiculous. It completely commits and it's brilliant. Some of the songs in it are absolute bangers. I actually read the book it was based on, which is also called Pitch Perfect, and it is a non-fiction book about the a cappella groups.
Non-fiction?
It's non-fiction. The original the original book of Pitch Perfect was non-fiction. It was just all about the a cappella groups in, you know, the colleges in the USA, and they are insanely popular, apparently. They do have groupies. The Troublemakers were based on some people called the Beelzebubs, I think. There's something Beelzebubs, but I forget exactly what. Ohio, let us know if you know. We're dumping a lot of stuff on Ohio this episode. You got this. I believe in you.
Got to earn your number one status.
My very favorite bit is right near the beginning where Anna Kendrick, who is alternative, of course, because she wears dark eyeliner and more than one pair of earrings at once. Oh my God, so alternative.
It's wild.
She's looking around all these, I don't know what they do, they have like a little mini fair, don't they, at the universities to say, come and join our club and stuff like that. And there's one for DJs. So she turns up and she's reading it and Fat Amy is like, no, no, it's not, it's deaf Jews. And this guy just stands up and goes, Shalom!
Yeah, it is good. That was very funny.
They are number two. Second best chick flick of all time, in my opinion, is 2012's Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, very good. At number two, I have 2012's Pitch Perfect, weighing in at 1 hour and 52 minutes. I mean, we've talked about Love It, but I'm going ahead anyway. Pitch Perfect follows a group of college students who form an all-female a cappella singing group, the Barton Bellas. After a rough start and a major setback, they recruit new members and reinvent their style to compete against rival groups in national competitions, aiming to win the championship. Right from the off, a cappella universal music, where they do... That's all a cappella, and it goes straight into the Troublemakers doing their set at the opening film. So bang, straight in. Yep. No preamble, no boring fuckery. It's right onto the action. As you said, Becca, Anna Kendrick, basically a miserable, selfish, disrespectful pain in the ass. She's very good at music, though, good at production and good at mashing up songs. And a girl can seriously sing. Chloe, nice and hot and immediately likable, and a redhead and hot. Did I mention about hot? I think so.
She was quite hot.
Yeah.
Doesn't she get introduced naked as well? Oh, no, that's just a little bit later in the film. But yeah.
Yeah, she's a bit naked in the shower. And she's all right. She's comfortable with all this.
Yeah, yeah. You should be.
Yes, quite right. Aubrey is boring and set in her ways and thinks the Bellas should stay boring and predictable. I quote, "We don't stray from tradition." So obviously, Aubrey and Becca clash a lot because they're so different. And although they're both a pain in the ass, they do manage to get there in the end. Meanwhile, Chloe is lovely and hot.
Aubrey is also redonka hot. Let's not mess around.
She is, but she's also a dick, so I'm not including her. Hotness comes from more than just looking hot.
Does it? So I'm sure we're going to hear about how hot Fat Amy is in just a minute.
Well, no, I'm calling both of them. And also, she's really annoying, not hot. Okay. So there's also the love thing, which is Becca and Jesse, one of the Troublemakers, have a sort of relationship. It's really very who cares.
Mm-hmm.
Fat Amy, Rebel Wilson for the obvious humour. Stacey, Cynthia and Lily, more of kind of off the wall and sex-based humour. They're a funny team. And somehow I still get goosebumps when they get the group back together and they sing that Bruno Mars mashup. It's just chuffing brilliant. But also what you didn't mention, which for me is absolutely mandatory, Gail and John, the not really main characters, but definitely some of the funniest. Yes. The ghastly commentary pair whose lives revolve around collegiate a cappella competitions because they're awful commentators and people, but funny as hell. Quotes such as, "Nothing makes a woman feel more like a girl than a man who sings like a boy." Then John with, "This number is like an elephant dart to the public's face." Great stuff. And then another quote I put in because I loved it was the, what's his name? The boy, Jesse. Says, Becca says, "You're drunk." He goes, "I'm not drunk at all. You're just blurry." Good stuff. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Totally agree. Yep. It's just right up there with the greatest of all time. And either way, it's going to be the second best chick flick of all time.
Excellent. I'm pleased about that.
So good. Let's go and have a look at our worst, shall we?
So, Pitch Perfect, officially the second best chick flick of all time. People describe it as a guilty pleasure, and it's not a guilty pleasure. It is just pleasure, right? Forget about the guilt and save all that guilt for Pitch Perfect fucking free. Oh, my God. 2017, directed by somebody called Trish Tsai. I don't care your shit, Trish. Pitch Perfect 3 was utterly out of ideas. Pitch Perfect 2 was teetering on the edge of ideas because it was a film about college students singing a cappella. Pitch Perfect 3 somehow fucking now they're spies who sometimes sing a cappella whilst on their world tour. Fat Amy literally becomes a fucking ninja and starts sneaking around and hanging onto ceilings and beating everyone up. The fuck happened? It's just so bad. Stacey's not even in it. Ridiculous. Well, she is for like a minute second because apparently she's having a baby and that's why she can't go. I think she read the fucking script and went, no, bruv, I'm not sticking my name anywhere near this. Well done. Alexis Knapp, I believe her name is. The cast didn't suddenly get bad. It's just your fucking origin of the story was just completely and utterly gone. And DJ Khaled turns up as himself and that's all you need to say. Fuck you, DJ Khaled. Fuck you, Pitch Perfect 3, for shitting on what is an excellent film.
Fair enough.
Mm.
My worst film is Dirty Dancing. 2017.
Yes.
2 hours and 10 minutes. That's right. A full 30 minutes longer than an absolutely brilliant film that never needed remaking. We have talked about this one, haven't we, in our
reboots and remakes. It has previously been a worst musical. No,
worst. It has.
Ooh. Wasn't what it was reboots it worst and musical? Remakes? It might have been. But I can't look at it.
Ooh. I have to look it up, but either way, it deserves to keep being brought up as an absolute travesty of a film.
Our first double worst. I don't think anything else has managed to get worse in two topics.
The Dirty Dancing remake is what happens when you take a beloved classic, run it through a committee, and leave it in the tumble dryer for too long. Chemistry? Gone. Magic? Gorgeous. Missing. Iconic moments? Somehow both rushed and dragged out at the same time. An absolute cinematic paradox. It's longer, shinier, and somehow way more boring. Like someone thought, you know what? This tight emotional story needs more stuff, none of it better.
No.
And then spaffed out a film with absolutely no chemistry, just wooden acting, uninspiring, not pleasing on the eye, just naff, bad, bad times.
Yeah. And they sang. Let's not forget they fucking sang for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, that can fuck off too.
That's right. And that it was in the reboots and remakes because I brought that up and you were surprised to hear that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had to watch fuck it after awful. You ripped on it. And
then so I was like, bad.
Good grief, what have you done?
And I don't want to get into body shaming because, oh my God, if anyone's going to get into body shaming, it shouldn't be people like me. But the girl they had to play Baby wasn't Hollywood skinny. Which means that she looked, compared to all the people around her, quite a big girl. And I was legitimately a bit worried when the dude did the lift at the end. I was like, ugh! Also, she wasn't fucking dancing.
Skinny. Let's face it. She couldn't dance. She was a shit dancer. God, she was terrible, wasn't she?
Oh, God, the whole thing was terrible. No, I agree, yeah. Two excellent shit films. It's a good job the rankers don't have to choose between them, because I think they would find it hard if they've had the misfortune of watching either of them.
And you're absolutely right. Pitch Perfect 3 is a travesty.
Absolute travesty, but let's not think about them anymore, Hurst, for it is time for our number ones.
Excellent.
Hurst. Somebody called Jimmy Cameron decided to go and look at a boat and made the fucking best film of all time.
Oh, now this is... I might challenge you on this.
Well, you can challenge away, Hurst, but then you'll think about the first three quarters of the film and go, oh, yeah, probably. It's Titanic. Of course it's Titanic. Regular listeners of the show will know that I love Titanic and I will defend it to the death. But just in case somehow you don't know what I'm talking about, Titanic is directed by James Cameron. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, and it mixes a fictional romance with the real 1912 sinking of the RMS Titanic. famously massive production. It was 200 million, I think, at the time, the budget, making it the most expensive film ever made at that point. And of course, it made shit tons back. It was the first film to bust $1 billion, rightly deserved, because it was superb. Not only did it bust $1 billion, but it bust $1 billion whilst being over 3 hours long, something Hearst hates. And that means, of course, that you can't show as many times in the cinema. So, fuck, this did a really good job at making its money. It's not just a chick flick, I accept that. It spends quite a long time being a chick flick, and then it's suddenly a disaster movie. I'm all right with that. I'm aware of that. Why not, right? Why not make your film for chicks and have them all happy and then, oh, fuck, everyone at the end dies. And of course, it's kind of epic. It's a historical thing. It's a class war melodrama. It's very impressive technically. It was a juggernaut at the Academy Awards. It got 14 noms and 11 Oscars, including Best Picture and Best Director, as it fucking should. James Cameron made a date movie and accidentally made one of the best disaster movies of all time off the back of it. And it is your ultimate chick flick, Hearst. If your idea of a chick flick includes mass death, class politics, industrial negligence, and Cameron trying to drown a film crew. I remember when my father watched this film, he didn't like it because it was too girly. And he said there was only one good bit, that was the steam engines. And I said, but what about the bit with the painting? And he said, okay, there were three good bits. Yes. There you are. Number one best chick flick of all time is Titanic.
Yes. You've touched upon the reason why I'm going to argue this one. And it's not because it's not one of the greatest films of all time, because it is spectacular.
Yes.
Funnily enough, when I was watching Dirty Dancing this morning, just to hone in my notes, it finished, and you know how Amazon Prime will just start another movie.
Oh, yeah.
It started Titanic. Mm. And about half an hour in, I was like, right, okay, I've got to stop this because I've got to go on with some stuff today.
Oh, but yeah, I got and you've got another 3 hours of
straight TV into 3 hours of disaster movie, epic movie. I mean, yeah, it's got a romance story in, but
it's not got it. It is a romance story. I don't think there's any way you can deny it. The whole film is about Jack and Rose and how they go on the best date ever until it turns into not.
Yeah, but it's just not a rom-com. It's not a chick flick. It's not
a rom-com. It
doesn't have to be a rom-com, but
no,
it's just not a chick flick. It's an epic, or it's a disaster movie, or any combination of those.
Mm.
It's action and adventure, even. It's borderline natural disaster because it happened because of an iceberg.
Yeah, that's true.
There's all sorts of things it is, but chick flick, I don't know, because if I thought that that was a chick flick, I'd probably have it close to my number one. Number one, because I've considered it and went, nah, that's not a chick flick.
It's
epic disaster movie.
It is an epic disaster romance movie. There's no denying that. It appears on many other people's lists of worst chick flick. How dare they, Hearst?
Oh, fuck those guys. They're even more wrong than you
are. And you know they're guys. What a bunch of idiots. Either way, Hearst.
Well, the bankers will let us know what they think about that. Yes. Yes, hit me with some facts.
Well, now I'm going to have to edit that weirdly. Anyway, cool, why not? I might just leave the whole thing as it was. Fact. James Cameron himself got so fed up with people saying how much room was left on the door at the end of the movie that he made a Twitter post of him and his, at the time, wife, who was Sarah Connor, off of Terminator, and got the actual door from the movie and put it in their pool in New Zealand, and it promptly sank with just Linda Hamilton on it, and Cameron made some kind of remark about Kate Winslet not being as chunky, and he and Hamilton divorced 3 months later. Now, I'm not saying that's the reason they divorced, I'm just saying that that is something that happened. He's a brave man to call Sarah Connor chunky. Or, in fact, Kate Winslet and Gloria Stewart were both Oscar nominated for playing Rose.
Ooh.
That's one's really long and one's really short.
Yeah. Oscar nominated for the older lady, presumably, as well.
Yes.
What kind of Oscar would that be? Because it's not Best Actress. It's a supporting. I don't even think she was supporting. I suppose anyone who isn't the main actor could be a supporting actor.
Well, don't forget that Hannibal Lecter won for Best Actor and he was only on the screen for 14 minutes in Silence of the Lambs.
Mm. When did Twitter come out?
Fucking years ago.
I don't know. I don't think he'd have still had that door kicking around. If he did, he wouldn't have chucked it in a swimming pool because it's an iconic piece of cinema.
I think it was designed to float, right?
I think it can't be that first one. I think it must be the second one is the true one.
You are correct. Hooray! Yes.
Okay, good.
Completely forgot Twitter wouldn't have existed back then.
Yeah. So I get 94. It's like, I can't believe that, even though I think Squirrel might have known
better. 97. Yeah. I was 9 years early. Twitter was 2006.
Yeah, there we go. That's
what I get. It's usually called Twitter with no eyes in.
Twitter. Right. My number one, which I knew wasn't going to be the same as your number one after you talked about Pitch Perfect 3, because you had some disdain for Pitch Perfect 2.
Wow.
Oof. Fucking love Oof. Pitch Perfect 2.
Get him, Rankers.
No, because it is... Yeah, the original was a better story, but fuck me, does Pitch Perfect 2 make me laugh my ass off. Pitch Perfect 2 off of 2015, weighing in at 1 hour and 55 minutes. Now, I know it isn't as good of a story as Pitch Perfect, but it is absolutely funny as balls. Three times defending a cappella champions, the Barton Bellas, perform to the President of the United States. Fat Amy has a wardrobe malfunction, accidentally flashing Obama with her floof. They get banned from performing at collegiate level unless they win the world championships, because obviously. Meanwhile, Becca is sensibly pursuing a career for after college, but is doing it like a dick behind the group's back. Chloe can't let go of being a Bella, but she's still hot. Bit of uncertainty and conflict, resolved with schmaltz in the middle, happy ending, standard chick flick formula. But it really is funny as shit and has some excellent performances. The whole film is basically nonsense, I absolutely accept that, but it takes all the funniest elements of the first one, then expands them and adds two other crucial elements. Firstly, Becca's boss, Sammy, played by Keegan-Michael Key, off of Key and Peele, and Das Sound Machine, plus a cameo from Snoop. Sammy is an absolute arrogant record producer, and Becca's trying to impress him, and he says a line which I still think is one of the great quotes of any film. He says, "My time is like a toddler in a tiara, short and precious." Like, yes, that's so funny. And that whole thing's great, the way his bunch of hipster idiot record producers are dicking about, and it's a bit of a piss take of the whole record industry, and it's funny that Snoop does pop in there and do a cameo because he's doing a Christmas album, which is hilarious in itself. But more importantly, Das Sound Machine. When they go to the Worlds, they're basically, their biggest competition is Das Sound Machine, who are a sculptured European a cappella cyborg group, basically. And they are absolutely tremendous because they use real worldwide a cappella groups for it. So the performances are absolutely off the chart, but they really German them up to the max. So when they start singing, "They will not control us, we will be victorious," so outrageously over German, "This is how we do it."
Yeah, that's the one.
It's just so funny. And Gail and John get more lines and action, which is very welcome because they are so god-awfully inappropriate. John kicked it off with, "Welcome back, a cappella enthusiast. My name is John Smith. Sitting to my left is Gail Abernathy McCadden Feinberger." "Well, you saved the Jew for last." And Gail goes, I did. And then Gail says, "These girls are working harder than a nun in a cucumber patch." John, this is like watching a bunch of toddlers try to assemble IKEA furniture where they're doing their, trying to compete with Das Sound Machine by doing circus acts, and it's absolute bobbins. It's really, really fucking funny. And the whole film just has amazing, amazing a cappella performances. Plus, it makes me laugh my tits off every single time. So, yeah, it had to be my number one. Even though it's not technically as good, it's much funnier. So I let it go. And of course, it's still got all the lovely ladies from Pitch Perfect 2 that hasn't taken it so far as they are secret spies and nothing to do with collegiate singing.
Fucking
anymore.
Bullshit. Stupid Pitch Perfect 3. Wow.
So there we go. That is my number one. And you may not like it. And you say get them rankers, but at least it is a chick flick.
I mean, it is a chick flick, much like Titanic. It's just not a good one. So it was an all right film. Don't get me wrong. It was much better than Pitch Perfect 3. Jesus Christ. But
Nails on a Blackboard is better than Pitch Perfect 3.
So. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Fact, an estimated fact, me host.
Okay. Fact. Snoop Dogg was reportedly paid $1 million for 5 minutes of recording, but then he gave it all to a dog charity. Fact, the second, the Green Bay Packers, who appear in an a cappella off in Freaky Guy's basement, requested to be on the film via Twitter.
Yes, they sent a tweet to Elizabeth Banks, who played the commentator lady and was actually the producer of all the shows. Yes, indeed. And they did their own singing.
Yeah, and they were great.
Yeah, yeah, they did a dance routine as well. Right? Yes,
actual Clay Matthews in Pitch Perfect 2. How could you not love that?
And Turk from Scrubs and Boyle from Brooklyn Nine-Nine were both in that little singing group, weren't they? That hung around to get punched or whatever.
Well, that was in Pitch Perfect 1. Turk actually didn't turn up in Pitch Perfect 2. They'd replaced him with... what's his name from the boy one? Not Beaker.
Bumper.
Bumper, that's it. So Bumper joins the old guy one because he's a has-been.
Brilliant. Wow. Rankers, there is our top five. Some glorious films in that top five as well.
And some controversy.
And
number one, both of us controversial at number one. So how will that go down?
Sort it out, Rankers. That is literally your job. So we'll let him get on with that, Hurst, while we discover what we're going to do next week. No new ones to talk about her, so let's jump straight into spinning the wheel. Is there anything that you are particularly looking forward to?
Yeah, top five guitar riffs I quite like to do. Keanu movies would be good, although I'd rather have a bit of time off movies because then Carly can pick some because she has to sit there and watch a lot of stuff that I want to watch for the show when we have movie ones to do. Yes,
I watched 10 Things I Hate About You last night.
So did I. Not last night, but...
As good as I remembered is where I got to on that.
It was all right. It was just generic for me. It didn't make my list. Yeah. Based on the telling of the shrew, wasn't it?
Yes. Are you ready to give it a spin, Hurst?
Yes, let's do it.
The answer is... Oh, no, Carly. Oh, no. It's really long, three-hour-plus films.
Oh, sweet. It means we get to watch Titanic. Might be number one 2 weeks running.
Two episodes in a row. Oh, that would be a first.
That would be a first, for sure.
I mean, you say it might be. Fucking tune in, because another one of my favourite films of all time is also over 3 hours.
Yeah. Oh, man. Filmed over 3 hours. Better go and make her some tea.
God damn. Yeah, I can't think who that one is by. If it's by you, do let us know in the comments, or let us know by visiting our Facebook page, which is Top 5 Face Off, or sending us an email, hello@top5faceoff.co.uk, or going on to Blue Sky, or leaving a comment on Spotify, or any of that stuff. Just get in. You know how to get in touch. It'll be fine. Come on. Be fine. Yeah.
Hook us up.
Yeah. Speaking of hooking people up, Hurst.
Nice.
Let's say someone had shot somebody in the head and it had made such a mess of their wall and they thought, blah, I don't want to clean that. I'll just cover it up with some arts. Ooh, where could they get their arts?
Prison. No, I would suggest that they came and buy one of my particularly big paintings to make sure they cover it all up. And you can get hold of those either directly to me or through my website, which is doghouseart.co.uk. I do also have an open studio the weekend coming up, which will be the 2nd and 3rd of May in Retford. Yes. If you're in the area, do come and see me. I'll be knocking off at 4 p.m. And if you're around for that, we will definitely go out for drinks. Aside from that, yeah, just have a little look, see if there's anything you like. Or go on my Doghouse Art Instagram, because there's more paintings on there than there are on my website at the moment.
He's working on it, Rankers. And you could also join our Patreon. That helps us out because you get to suggest stuff that we then have to rank, such as 3-hour-long movies. I was going to say something else about the Patreons, and of course, several people's favourite bits of the last episode, where you doing names in the form of Starscream.
Right. What am I doing it as this time?
I haven't given any thought, which is perhaps a bit stupid of me, so I'm just going to, off the top of my head, what I want, Hurst, is our number ones in the style of an a cappella singing group.
Gas chap. They got the goddess of jasmine. The goddess of jasmine and the dev pass. Ohio. On a temporary visa. Did I get everyone? How many was that?
Nope, you missed someone who likes Batman a lot.
Oh, yeah. Cool That Show, yeah.
I'm sorry, that's going to just sound incredible.
Don't see how it could sound anything else.
Wow, exactly that, Hurst. I'm sure that won't be a low moment in your life or anything when you hear it.
I'll be pleased for that to be on the internet forevermore.
There we go. Rankers, don't let him down. If you want to hear your name acapellaed or said like Starscream, or from our Patreon episode the other day, said like Darth Vader by me, because everything's a bit backward on our Patreon episodes, then do join our Patreon, our number ones feed, which is limited to 20 people only and will cost you a fiver a month. Bargain, Hurst.
That is absolute bargain, mate.
There you go. But you don't have to pay us money. You could just tell someone about this show. And that would also be super helpful. Or leave a rating and a review. I don't know if we've had any of them yet.
Yeah, could you guys do us a review? Just that would be really nice.
Not a bad one.
A good review. Yeah.
Yeah, that's important, I believe, for the algorithm, which we must forever feed.
Yes, all hail the algorithm.
All hail Megatron, all hail the algorithm. Right. Shall we slam this one into reverse and back it into a parking space, Hurst?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening, Rankers. As always, it is a pleasure to tell you what things are best and what things are not best. And please rewind this podcast for the next person that comes along, and we will see you to the next episode. 3 hour plus films. Jesus.
See you later, Rankers. Love you.
Top 5 Face-Off is presented by Matt Hurst and Matt Squirrel and produced by Powerstorm Awesome Fire Incorporated. For more details and to vote for a winner, visit top5faceoff.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
Does my face look as red to you as it does to me? And it's mad, isn't it?
It's powerful red. I assume it's just lighting issues.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I have been in the sun all day, but I am definitely not burnt.
Oh, I hope not.
That would be terrible. I'd be in hospital. I think I was as red as I look on there.
Yes.
Anyway, we're going to go along with it anyway, even though it's wildly distracting for me.
What's been going on, Hurst? Nothing much since we talked about whatever we talked about last time, which I've completely and utterly forgotten. Nothing much, Hurst, since we talked about 80... Fucking hell.
After a bit of convincing, Molly joins the Scooby Gang as the tearful one, and they solve crimes. No, they solve the crime, kill the baddies, you all go to hell.
God, that was loud. Do they solve the crime again, but not into your bug of hand? That's true. And hey, also true of my number 4, Hurst. Although there was nothing wrong.
So, Rankers, what you're hearing here is Fonzie realising that Carly's taken Doug and Eddie to the paddock so they can have a run around, and that I'm not around, and he's lonely. Charlie's still there with him, but that's not enough for Fonzie, even though he's been to a dog show today. Not sure how I feel about that. The Sound Machine were excellent as comedy enemies to the Barton Bellas, but Bumper, I'm not sure. As a spin-off,
you made Jamil's in it, if that helps you.
I might give it a watch.
Yeah. It's Titanic. Of course it's Titanic. Regular listeners of the show will know that I get a boner for Titanic every time I think about it. That might not stain.
Top 5 Face Off.